Hello, welcome to episode number 186 of the Applelogue Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. This podcast is brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com. You can get a free 7-day trial with the code word Applelogue by going to BetterHelp.com/Applelogue. You can talk with an affordable private online counselor anytime, anywhere, and it's very good to have these, you know, ways to speak to people. And that's where BetterHelp comes in. It's a pretty cool function. And, you know, like I said, it's cheap and you can get a free 7-day trial. Enter the code word Applelogue. Amazon shoppers, thank you so much for shopping on Amazon and supporting the show. You too can support the show by going to Applelogue.ca/Amazon or Applelogue.ca/US Amazon. You can do it the old-fashioned way, too, by going to Applelogue.ca and click on the banners located on the right side. Locate your country, whether you're from Canada, the United States, or the UK, and bookmark all those links. And every time you shop on Amazon, use those links to shop and support the show. Cost you no extra money. I'd like to thank all my patrons, and you can be a patron, too, by going to patreon.com/Applelogue. Pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel at any time. If you want to buy some stuff in the shop, go to applelogue.ca/shop. There's some music in there, and there's a t-shirt you can buy. If you're on iTunes, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Give it 5 stars, please. And like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/applelogpod. Follow me on Twitter at simonhead666. Today on the show, it's a very special show for me. 15 years ago, I made a record with a couple of my good friends, who turned into be my touring compatriots, my business partners, and, you know, a couple of my best friends. And we did this record, and we put it out. It came out on a record label. We toured a bunch on it. We thought it was going to be, you know, the big times. People were telling us, oh, this is going to be the best record. It's going to do good. It didn't do that great, but at the same time, we learned a lot about what it was to write music and what it was like to go into the music business. And having sort of like a blind ambition that sort of takes you into things, so you learn a lot of things about yourself. My good friend Jason Liamanis and Alan Shaw, who came over last week, and we talked about this album. We went a little long, so I'm going to break it into two parts. And this is part one of two. And this is the Three Chords One Capo 15th Anniversary, part one on the Applelogue Podcast. It's been 15 years since we put this record out, or did the record. I think I can't even remember when it actually came out, but I think it was in the fall of...
Yeah.
Yeah, but we recorded it in March of 2003. Wow. Early March. Had a baby halfway through it, and then had to stop, and then got back into it and finished the record, and we already had the record deal at that time. So there's a lot involved there. I mean, there was, like I said, like 5 weeks, 3 weeks.
There was the change of the studios, which was a huge part of that.
Yep, absolutely.
We can get into.
And I think the very beginning, Bad Taste thought that we were going to use our demos. They didn't realize we were going to record the album again.
That's true.
So that's how the whole thing started, where we had to go out and buy gear. And
I had to learn how to play to a click. what else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we could talk a little bit about how we met Jay, because we had already had, like, a few drummers play drums, and we thought we'd do this. We already had, I think we, did we have the record deal at that point?
Yep.
So we'd already had someone say, we're going to put your record out, but we didn't have a drummer. So we actually did a call. Remember we did, like, a in the newspaper, kind of like,
yeah,
who's going to play drums on this record?
No attitude.
No attitude. Yeah, attitude. It must have a clean driving record.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just wrapping up police college, or my first semester of that. And I saw that ad. And I remember we auditioned at.
Was it literally an ad in the newspaper?
Yeah.
Was it? No, it was like
Now Magazine?
Toronto Musician or something.
Something like that.
Thing like that.
But it was wow. Chris Slorak's house from Now Mets.
Yeah.
And
some jazz drummer. I used his little Gretsch kit and I totally detuned everything. He was super pissed because I remember Chris saying, like, yeah, the drummer was like, yeah, man. took me like 3 years to dial in that kit, and I just fucking
came in,
it.
Nailed it. Yeah. Well, there the other guy that we tried out. It was a bit of a you were a bit of a shoe in.
Nope.
The other guy we tried out was this guy who brought in his own charts. Hell Space is great.
Charts.
He brought in charts, and he had like he played like super
skeezer beats
loose.
Skeezer
and he's
beats.
Playing every he played the same like two different songs but the same way. And we're like, dude, you got the right song. And he goes, oh man, got the wrong song. So they'd be like, flip and then he'd play it again exactly the same way.
Flip through the charts.
That beat. Over and over again.
So then we try out Jay, and I'm like, anybody's great, you know. Yeah. And Jay had this amazing attitude. You know what I mean? Like
Jay came down to my apartment the first time.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that.
To get a copy of the songs, and he tried to go through. I lived at an old building on the.
I was super ill, like had a dying of a cold.
Dying of a cold.
High on NyQuil
and he
whatever.
Tried to go in between. With his parents' van in between where people walk. It wasn't wide enough.
It wasn't even wide enough for a car, but I was so like fucked on cold meds. I was like, oh, I'll make it.
Got the car wedged.
Was that where you got loaded and was telling like playing like Sam I Am song?
That was a few months
after. That's after he was fully in the band.
Yeah, where I got the whole this is where Foursquare
came from.
Early, and it was like, early Green Day, Sam I Am.
Sunny Day Real Estate.
Sunny Day Real Estate, yeah.
Ridiculous.
And, oh, you gotta hear this.
Yeah.
And I know when Al gets into listening to this, it's like half a song.
Yeah.
Like, where'd the rest of it go?
I don't think even half a song. Yeah. It's usually about 10 bars.
Crash course in emo. Yeah.
And that was that was back in the days of Buck a Beer, Lakeport Honey. Which I think Al drank about 18 of them.
I did.
The thing about Jay, you were 22 years old. I know you were 22 when you joined the band. And we were all well into our 30s. I was 33. How old were you?
Speak for yourself.
I was 33.
For this record?
When Jay joined the band.
So I would have been 29. Yeah.
29. Okay, so you're
21 or so. Yeah,
21 or 22.
Yeah.
And my favorite Jay story is when we're driving by and we had the bus at the time and you go, I found this vinyl player. All I need some vinyls to play some vinyl on my vinyl player.
Oh, man.
You remember that?
I think that was... That was the old school bus?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We were outside the beer store. We're getting beers, and you go, see, I got this new... I found this vinyl player out on the side of the road. All I need is some vinyl to play some vinyls.
I knew vinyl was cool back then.
So. Yeah, that's right. It still was.
Yeah.
So, although, you know, Jay, you were 21, you had no idea what kind of music we'd come from. Because,
nope.
Of course, why would you?
Nope.
And you're kind of like new metal kind of guy?
Yeah, I was coming out of a new metal band that unfortunately kind of fell apart. And it was a lot of fun doing that. It was a good group of guys. It was One Up Grunt. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Good group of guys. And I don't know, kind of fell apart. And I think we took over that rehearsal space.
That's right. Where
you guys at?
That's the other impressive part is that Jay had a rehearsal space, had his own drum kit.
That's why I got the gig, because I had a room.
He had a room.
And a van.
Yeah, all you needed was a van. You'd be, you'd be totally in. I was the one with the van.
It had a Culligan water cooler, too. So
Culligan.
The
walls were blue carpet.
Yep.
So, and going back to Bad Taste, we had already delivered all these demos, and you're like, awesome, we're going to put this out. And I go, well, we need to record it first, because we haven't got our band together yet. So we ended up like...
Well, they didn't want to pay us. They thought that
they wanted to pay, but they thought they had the record.
Oh,
and
the demos...
like, no, that's not the record. Those are the demos. So, you know,
right.
The demos aren't...
Nice, Jay.
That's Pardon not the me. Record. Like, that has like three different drummers on it, me being one of them, you know what I mean? Like,
but I think the thing for me that stood out too was like, these guys really aren't messing around. And I think it was more so Simon going, you know what, they want to hear more music. I'll just go into my catalog of 50 other songs that I have written. I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
that was impressive to me.
It was a very, actually for writing songs, that was a pretty fruitful time.
Yeah.
Because we had already made one record. It was that When Weeks Were Weekends. And there was some like, it just sort of ended on a downer with whoever was in the band. It sort of just went, you know. And then I just kept starting writing songs and I just moved into our new house. So I was just like building them all up. And I was like, one of these things where, and then Al and I would write lyrics. And when I remember when we got the hook in Hitmaker and I was like, I think we high-tenned.
Yeah.
It was like, yes, that's, you know what I mean? That was the moment where I'm like, holy shit, because I'd never really worked like that with people.
Yeah, know? And when so, we came the Mary Tyler Moore bit in the
gonna make it after right. all.
Yeah,
yeah, and that was like, you know, there were special times that we were super prepared. We had all the songs, we had the means, we had the recording gear, and we had sort of the know how. I didn't really know so much. Like, I didn't know how to record on a computer, and Al was sort of like the starting point of all that for me. Like, so all I have is computers now. Like, you know,
I can see. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm built up here. And just recording that record was funny because we made our own little booth in your room.
That's right.
Oh, right.
And it was like these, I can't remember what we used, but we made this little hut.
It was, we even put a roof on it. It was like these partition walls. Prefab partition walls, and we put three together and then stuck one on top and for an ISO booth.
I remember laughing, going, we're going to record our record here, right here. This is where we're going to record this record, the record.
But impressive. There wasn't like any bleed. I think we made out okay with like other, you know, bands not really rehearsing.
I remember Simon would get so mad when another band would start playing because we're trying to record it.
How dare they? Yeah. We're recording in a rehearsal
fucking
place.
Assholes.
Yeah. How dare they?
With the doors open and room mics in the hallway.
Yeah.
But we got lucky. Place. We got lucky with some of those little tricks.
And, that's when we decided, or one of us, maybe me, decided that we were going to drink 1,000 beers in this recording session. And we decided.
I had no influence working at the beer store at the time.
No, not at all. And I remember we had this little tiny bar fridge. Yeah. And I think it was my bar fridge from what I got, like as a wedding present or something.
Maybe.
I just threw it out. And then I would start around 3 to do whatever I was doing.
Hammered.
And then Jay would show up after work with a case of beer and fill it up completely.
Sometimes 2.
Sometimes 2 cases of beer.
They were 26.40 after tax at the time.
No, they're 24 straight. And then after they added that bottle deposit, don't fuck around. Al. I know my shit.
Sorry.
My favorite moments was coming to rehearsal and Jay would tell some crazy one story per rehearsal. We rehearsed like 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Like to just rehearse. Like that was just unheard of now for me. Yeah. But to rehearse 3 times a week, Jay would come in with one story. Every story would be like this amazing thing where somebody either tried to throw a punch at you or a guy drove his car through the window.
Guy's trying to take off with his car and we're like hanging out the driver's seat trying to pull the keys out. And no, beer store was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good for crazy stories, especially working in the heart of Scarborough.
Yeah, that's right. We're all I mean, just now that they privatize beer sales, that's not going to have stories like that anymore. Nope. They're going to be walking to Longo's and go, yeah, there. And they'll be like, fuck you, get out of here.
Yeah, but apparently our buddy Doug Ford's bringing back Bucket Beer.
That's what I heard. That's his platform. We're going to get everybody wasted, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
No good.
So, yeah, having Jay in the band was like, and then we got Phil Zeller to play bass on it. And I think I really wanted Phil to be in the band. Like, I think that was sort of like, we thought, that's it. We've got our bass player, and Phil never had an intention of being in the band.
No,
Phil was the fucking best, man.
Yeah, he was awesome. I think he was into metal, and he was in a metal band at the time as well.
Yeah, he was in Banger.
And then Rammer was after. Rammer was short after.
Yeah. Banger.
But he because I would ask him, like, you're going to join his band, right? And he'd be like, I don't know.
He just liked drinking beers with us.
He's like hanging out.
Totally, yeah.
Because we played a few shows with him, too, right? Like, I think he played bass with us at least in... Or did he play... No, because Slorak joined us shortly
after that.
Slorak
did the Treble Charger stuff.
Did Slorak play with us on this, on 3 Chords?
No, Chris was gonna, and then we had already had, like, a tour kind of set up. I think we had already... I remember going for coffee, and Chris quit the band. That's where all that, like...
In the middle of practice?
No, in the practice, yeah. Like, because I said, hey, we got this tour, and I think we had just announced it. Like, we have this tour, it's in September, open for the Weekends. It's in Europe, and I could just see Chris going, oh, okay, I'm like, I'm going to get a coffee, and came back, and immediately, I think he told you guys, like, that's it, I can't be in this band anymore.
I don't remember that. Yeah. Maybe.
Or he had made the decision and told me later, but, yeah.
People tended to call me when they quit the band and tell me that they're not going to be in the band anymore.
Yeah, they're scared of me.
Yeah, I thought, well, okay. You're going to tell everybody else?
The messenger.
We got away pretty good with we didn't have to really kick too many people out of the band.
No. They just tended not to show up to practice.
Just quit. What was the guy with the hair problem? What was his name? The guy that showed up, he wore the toque constantly.
Oh, yeah.
Your buddy.
And,
yeah,
and
he's a friend of a friend.
Yeah, and something happened where somehow he got a virus sent from me, and he got so mad over email, like, you fucking asshole, you screamed up, my computer's all screwed. I'm like, it wasn't me. Yeah.
Wow, and that, so he quit.
Yeah, he quit.
I don't think it was working out.
He just never come. I think he came like 3 times and went, meh. He was kind of boring, too.
Yeah,
like, he was kind of like, he had that Greasy Danforth jam vibe.
Yeah, yes. High bass. You can see, if you can see the nuts, you're the wrong bass player for this band.
That's right.
Up to the shoulder.
Let's play
a
song.
And a toque.
Let's play a song. This is the first song. It wasn't the first song we recorded, but this is the song.
Mistreated.
Just use the phone, I'll come on over. I'll leave you alone, just get sober. When did all this get so lame? When did this become a game? I've climbed to high, now I can't get down. From this point I can't see the ground.
Got some promise. We were just talking about while we're playing that Phil Zeller, although played bass on the most of the record, he didn't play on that song and he didn't play on the last song because his car broke down in like at the beer store. And it was the beer store by O'Connor. Yeah, yeah.
You should get like some promo from them for this.
I know. Store, yeah. His car broke down. And I remember, because there's nothing I could do. He's like, dude, I need some help. I'm like, well, I'll come hang out with you. So I drove to the beer store and parked in the parking lot. And he was so bummed out with life. And he had a Mickey, like a little sippy sip. And he's like having little sips. Like I'm like, don't be sad.
I can't believe you were able to drive. Were you in the studio?
I was at home.
Oh, okay.
I was at home. Actually, that reminds me of another story. When I called Al, my car broke down on Gardner.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck in the Gardner, and I call Al. I call him, you son of a bitch. I call Al, go, fuck, my car is broken down. He goes, oh, man, that's shitty. I'm like, yeah, I got nobody to come pick me up.
That's classic Al. Like,
oh, that's too bad. God, what are you going to do? Well, I was hoping you'd come pick me up.
All right. Fuck, I'll be there.
That's
come
too
get
bad.
You.
That's too bad for you.
He's at home listening to records.
And then we got your neighbor with his tow truck to come try
to pick
yeah,
that's
car
right,
up.
Yeah. That's got nothing to do with this record. But that was funny. That kind of is a little insight because you're like, you were kind of like, yeah, that sucks. Your car broke down. And, yeah. And I kept hinting like, I got nobody to drive me or I'm health. Stuck here on
anything.
The side of the road.
I remember
like
that.
You need to paint it in letters 7 feet tall for Al to get it.
Yeah. I need you to come pick me up.
So say it, baby. Out loud.
So, okay. So yeah, recording. We had, how many songs in this record?
11?
I want to say 9.
There was 11.
Well,
and then
win.
We had two Japanese releases. Yeah.
Which I think you played drums on one of the tracks.
Was you it played on the Brian Adams one.
No, I
played
Brian
you
Adams.
Played Brian Adams.
You played on
I
the,
played on Dreamweaver.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God. I thought it was I Love Living in the City.
No, that was the next one. That was Industry at Home. Yeah. But I ended up, and I got a song on the, I got a demo on the EP too. Because we did the Hitmaker EP. And it's got this Another Year song that sounds so like Matthew Sweet. And it's got nothing to do with Foursquare.
I remember that too.
But, you know, just recording this record was one of those things because we had that moment where it's like, oh, we can do this. This is great. There was no, like, we can't fail. Like, we got this.
Well, yes and no. There was challenges, especially with, like, the rehearsal space. Because we basically, that building was shutting down. They were getting kicked out. And all of a sudden, we're in the middle of recording this. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we had to find a place to go to.
We did.
We got kind of roped in with the management there. And it was a big deal, as we were just talking about this.
Yeah.
And we were worried about, you know, how the sounds were going to change.
Yeah, continuity.
From one place to another. But
we lucked out, though, because we were done the drums.
Yes, we were.
The drums were done.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do.
Were they?
Yeah, because...
Industry was where we did.
You edited them all. First time you ever edited drums on a...
You did some, too.
Yes, I did. Yeah. But first time that either of us had ever really edited drums.
You guys are right. And we did cuts like a knife at the new place.
At the new place, that's right. Yeah. And Dreamweaver was done at the new place. Like the place we moved down the hall with the larger room.
The bigger room.
The one the guy thought I was stealing the...
For those of you out in Radioland, the the first room at the second rehearsal space was basically a... How big?
Oh,
10 by 10?
12 by 12, 12 maybe?
By 12 cubicle in an office space?
About this,
But they gave us two back to back, and we punched a hole in the wall.
Just to put the snake in. I remember having to go do overdubs because you had to walk all the way around to the other office.
And you'd have to time it when you were doing your own vocals because you'd have to hit the space bar and go sprinting around the corner to get your headphones on and start singing in time.
Yeah. There was, that's, I think once we got there, the 1,000 beer rule had been dropped.
Almost.
When we got into doing vocals, I think things hit a bit of a brick wall.
I think Phil and I were still...
Well, because you got hammered once or twice by yourself.
That was when we were doing drums and bass and nothing to do with me.
And that was rare, too. It wasn't like you were out getting...
Oh, I had a couple of bangers.
Oh, you're a different
place.
Story, my friend.
Yeah.
There was the moment where...
Please put it on me. What have been it?
I think there was one moment it came to a head that I was trying to do vocals, and you were like yelling down the talkback mic, and it was so loud in my headphones.
I remember that.
Do you remember that moment? And I just had a meltdown.
You snapped. Yeah,
it's so mad.
But that was also the time where Al had passed out, and I was pouring beer down his mouth,
that's right.
Just to see if he could still taste it or wake up. But I think Phil and I were just losing.
How did you get
it.
Home?
You probably had driven. There's no way I drove home.
No.
There's no way you and I drove.
There's no way anybody drove.
We were mostly done.
Can Kelly come get you?
Someone maybe. Get you? Somebody may have picked me up.
But there...
It's not like that was convenient for where any of us lived either. It was in the middle of nowhere.
No, it was
North Scarborough.
It was shit town.
Birchmount and Ellesmere, I think.
Yeah.
Birchmount, yeah. And we had... The old place, we had this weird metal band behind us. In the new place, we had... For a while, we had Anvil as neighbors.
Nightmare was the band.
Nightmare. That's
yes.
the band.
And Anvil beside us.
Anvil was beside us. And I actually, you can kind of hear it, actually. It's a few songs away, but...
Check one.
Yeah, you can hear lips checking the mic. And I remember, it's so funny, you would check the mic, but never sang. You remember they used to rehearse?
That's right.
They rehearsed three times. Like, but talk about ethic, man.
Those guys are incredible.
Three times a week, they would jam, never stop, never failed.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're machines. And I actually, it's funny, because I went on to go work at Steve's Music Store with Tyler Reiner, who's... Rob's son. The drummer's son. So I got to know Tyler really well. Hi, Tyler.
Yeah.
Are you listening?
Yeah. No, that was interesting because they were just like, you're like, they're the old guys. But then at the time, they probably weren't too much older than what I am right now. You know what I mean? But they got there every other day. They were rehearsing. It's insane.
Laser gun guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, let's hear another song. Here it comes.
You saw her face, she saved you from a lack of grace. It seems like years since you've been up at her arms. You took her out and came home late. She told her dad not to wait. And now these words are all I hear. Go down in history. Now she's at home and you're out late. You always tell her not to wait. And still these words are all I hear. I hate the way you think. I hate the way you smile. I hate the way you talk. I hate your style. I have no doubt that things would work out if you were just like me.
Time ending, and I think you guys are my introduction to 20-inch crash cymbals, which I think I was using 20-inch ride cymbals and breaking like a mother at the time.
Oh, right, because you had really thin cymbals, like real actual recording cymbals.
Yeah, but
and then
not,
we were like, yeah.
You're like, ramp it up, get a ride cymbal.
Hit it, pussy.
And that's when you, yeah. And that's when you had a really nice, tight-sounding maple set, didn't you?
Nope.
Multiple, like
that was
green and yellow and orange.
The Jelly Bean kit was a high-end maple custom kit.
Yeah,
what
and then you switched to
though?
The tie.
We
the
recorded
green ties?
A purple tie kit, purple which was shitty wood. It was like basswood and Chinese mahogany or some crap like that. But it, I mean, you pulled a fat sound out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were talking in the song like who did most of the lyrics, and it was this one in particular was pretty much all Al.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I think I probably like if you were to put a percentage on it, I probably did 30%. Al had a lot to say.
Oh, I just misunderstood that. I thought 70-30 was...
No, I would say that Al...
No, that song, and then you guys teased me because I was just like newly and fairly newly with Kelly, like 2 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is a Kelly. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's just, this is what came
What's
to my mind.
It's your old girlfriend song.
I know it wasn't. I don't know. That's just what came out.
Well, there was a moment where... Yeah, because that was this record for sure had like I had a few songs I think I got from Soup to Nuts, and then it was all like Office Space, Poison Arrows, I think I did most of.
Yeah, you did that. You recorded
Life,
that with...
No, I didn't do TV. But no,
with
that
Toutant. Toutant recorded the drums originally for the demo of
We Alone. I think Poison Arrows. I did the lyrics on We Alone.
I thought that... who did drums on the We Alone demo? Because that was...
Kevin Mellers.
Kevin, yeah.
Mellers did it,
cool,
yeah.
Some cool fills.
Yeah, I mean, that was the... I mean, the reason... I mean, it was a very... To me, it was a good decision to actually have, because we could have just put the demos out. I mean, they sounded pretty good.
Yeah, they're good enough.
But it wasn't a band, you know what I mean? And that was something we were really looking for, to have a real band. And I think I'd gone since 97 with this, and it was 2000, it was 6 years had gone by, and I was, you know what I mean? Like, I hadn't really put a band together.
And those demos were recorded over, like, over a year.
And although... they were good to write and record, there was also some weird blood behind the thing. There were some weird vibes. You know what I mean? Like, had we done it and used the old drummers or whatever, it would have not just been, it wouldn't have been, we wouldn't be here, because you'd be like, why can't I play drums? And you know what I mean? Like, or it was one of those things, right? Because we had that thing with another bass player where I played bass on the whole record. And then it turned into like him playing on two. And then you could tell it was trying.
I got to say, side note, that was always a treat for me to watch you play bass, because I had no clue you could just pick it up and shred on it. I was like, holy shit. And I think it was Red Fisher you got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But back on bass now, by the way.
Are you?
Yeah, I got myself a wedding band.
Oh.
I'm kicking ass on some wedding rock. Top 40. I got to learn 34 songs.
Oh, boy.
Our first throw is a pig roast. That's how far we've gone, boys.
Pig roast. Nice.
Is what? It Shaw's pig roast that you're doing?
I don't know. No, it's somewhere out yonder.
But probably a good question would be prior to that, before me coming along, how long were you guys together writing those songs?
We started in the band really... I remember the phone call.
With me?
It's 2001, I think.
No.
You joined proper, because I was in the new house. I was in the house at that point. And you called me at the house and said, I want to be in your band.
Yeah, I remember that.
But that was around 2000, I'd say.
99, 2000.
Yeah, yeah. Because when we moved...
No, it had to... Because...
was it the...
The girl that I was with before Kelly came to the house one time.
But I know, I always wanted you to be in the band, and I always wanted you to play music with you.
Yeah, until the first time we tried... And I was coming out of, that 8-pound test thing, and I was playing dissonant chords, and and you had some pop song, and I was writing crazy stuff over top of it that just didn't work at all. With Trevor.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
And I'm like, oh god, I don't know. And then I kind of reverted back to my high school days, where I was playing similar music to what Trigger Happy played.
Yeah.
And everything, I just kind of went, oh yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. But I mean, there was
major
always,
chords and
no, but wasn't that, because you always kind of put your own neat twist on it. It was simple enough, but it could make you think a little bit, because there was other things in there like, oh, okay, it wasn't just straight up. It wasn't sort of like, here's something that I normally do. So
there's a lot of little tasty small licks. I remember a lot of the guys I played with when they were listening to that going, holy cow, this is a little like 2-bar lead or 2-bar tag at the end of something that I'll
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Yeah, I always said that Al was the one with talent, and I was the one with vibe. We introduce ourselves as guitar players. That was my role was for vibe. It felt good when I played. But
I don't know how long. Like, did Danny help us write those? Do you think?
No. Well, Danny worked on a lot of lyrics, but that was for the other record.
That was the first one. So I think it was a clean cut. It may have just been you and I coming into this writing songs together.
I remember sending phone messages to your answering machine and going and playing certain songs from here, phone to the speaker.
Right.
Go check this out, you know.
Yeah.
And then Trevor had quit.
Danny was gone.
Danny was long gone.
Yeah.
And we had a drummer, we had Liam.
But that was before this too.
That was before this, but all those songs we played came into that, became the band. You know, Hitmaker, Craig Toutant played drums on Hitmaker.
Yes, he did, and on Poison Arrows.
Steve Krecklow played bass on Poison Arrows.
Yep.
But we had this sort of this amount of songs, but kind of like...
They would come, and they were coming out, I feel like, every
daily
week
or every other day.
Every other, or, you know, at least on a weekly basis, there'd be one more where we would go, wow. Yeah, okay, yeah. we can do this. And I remember Joa listening when we brought it into mastering and just going, oh my God, every song is, you know, stands alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of neat about
and
this record.
This record has, it's very strong. And it was sort of our, because the interesting, I guess it's not interesting, but the weird part of it is that I sent one demo to one record label and got an offer. I didn't send it to anybody else.
That was the Bad Taste?
That was Bad Taste.
Sutton helped us with that. Sutton's like, you got to hear this band, because he played with us.
Oh, that's right.
John had already played with us.
Yeah.
And Sutton's like, send your demo. I've told them that, you know, it'll be coming shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
But I didn't even hedge my bets. Like, I didn't send anything anywhere else.
No.
I think we sent something down to the, a few things down to the States and got, like, Fueled by Ramen, got a reply saying, nah, we're not into this. This was the record before, though, I think.
But I just remember Bjorn just, I think he kept asking for tunes and tunes. And that's when I was like, holy cow, Simon's just got a pile of songs here.
Yeah, there was a lot of songs. And they were like I said, kind of completed. But at the same time, we were still, were we working on stuff? Or did we just go into this and start recording it? Like, I can't remember.
No, all the songs, we sent them 8 or 10 anyway.
Yeah.
And they had them all, we had recorded everything. Because remember, I had a CD burner, if you can believe it, at the time, where I could.
You don't turn on the light, or it'll.
What's that?
It would if you touched any power outlet, it would fry the CD. But we were able to at least burn CDs at that point in time, and we had every song demoed.
I think I still have a stack of Foursquare demos, or like, you know, there was just the burned copies, like literally a stack saved.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
we burned everything.
Yeah, and they were like $1 a CD, too, to burn.
They were.
Yeah, easily $1 a CD.
Yeah, I used to go down. They were $1.25 because they came with a case.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, let's hear the Hitmaker song. This is the one that...
Single.
Got us all the...
Nothing.
All the money.
Slovaki.
All the Slovaki we could puke. Vocoder. I love that plugin.
Those little dissonant chords.
Yeah. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, the editing level
editing.
Of it all. Yeah.
Editing.
I didn't know what a crossfade was. So poor Joa was mastering this and had to like find the little snap.
What's that?
What's that snap?
What's that?
And then take it in down to like the mic, the, you know what I mean? Smallest.
Brever, Piros!
Piros had to take it down to the
Al just showed up with Coronas.
And had to take it down to like this, where you could just barely, you could actually literally see the wave and find the snap and fix the snap. And he did that for like the whole record. But like, what's that song? Steps. Al edited it and realized that there's crossfades.
Oh, okay. And we were just talking about percussion as well. Because you did it, the percussion on Industry?
Some?
I did some.
Okay, I thought you did it all, but
no.
Yeah, I was more involved with Al was more involved with the production of Industry because you didn't have a job.
That's right.
You just stay home.
But back to that song. So that's where the guys of Bad Taste were like, this is...
I think that was the one for all of us that went, oh, okay, because it was...
It had been Steps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That
until that was written.
Well, we wrote, yeah, because that's right. But the reason that song got written was that there was... I watched a Sum 41... And I tried to I wrote something that was sort of based on that speed. What's this? You know, damn it, whatever. But then Al and I got together and wrote lyrics. But when Al came up with "We're gonna make it after all," after the Mary Tyler Moore theme, I couldn't believe how well that fit.
Yeah.
It was like the beautiful, like,
we were just talking about that when you split and just like locking in that song when that chorus would kick in.
As soon as the chorus hit, it was just like off, you know what I mean? And there were special moments like playing that show, playing shows and playing that song where you could definitely tell that there was like something, you know what I mean? Like this had an effect.
Well, that and people were going nuts. People went nuts over that song.
They did. And I think Trevor added the point, we sped up the chorus by 1 BPM. That was Trevor's idea, and I'm pretty sure we recorded the chorus and the verses separately because we had the ability to do it with computers.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Because that was always there. Trevor's like, speed it up, and it'll just make...
That was an old Matt Hyde trick.
A Matt Hyde trick, yeah. And I'm sure we did it.
Yeah. But just playing it live, I mean, because who originally played drum? Was it Craig?
I think it was Craig, yeah.
It was Craig Tutone.
Or Trevor.
No, I
think that sounds like a Craig part.
Yeah, yeah. No, that that's definitely Tutone.
Yeah.
And this is sort of around that time, and there was a lot to be proved because when Trevor quit, we were all kind of like, he was our life. You know what I mean? Like he was the guy who was in the big band, who knew people, and to us, he was like our, you know, savior in a way. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when he left, there was like a big void. And then we kind of just sort of tried to compensate and tried to make more better songs. And there's a few got written around then. Like Office Space is one of them. Poison Arrows. Pretty much the rest of this. Oh, Steps was already written. Yeah,
Trevor wrote Steps. One, but I don't think we used it after he left the band.
I think I robbed.
Later, the chorus.
I'm sorry for ignoring that song.
Yeah.
I think I stole that song for the last record I just did by myself like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, there's a statute of limitation. I can, you know, there's no problems.
Yoink.
Yeah.
Bum the guy's
now.
Chorus.
Yeah, come get it. You come get your royalty check. I got it right here. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, doing the record like... the way we did it was sort of like this kind of loose, but at the same time, we were very focused about doing it.
Very focused.
Yeah. But it was also just trying to keep that momentum because none of us had really made a record where other people were paying for it.
Yeah.
None of us.
No. And also none of us had ever done a recording I guess you had, but as a band where we weren't in another studio working with another producer on their time. This was completely on our time.
Yeah.
And we were getting paid whatever it was to record the album. We were given a budget.
Yeah.
But we could spend as much time as we wanted to.
Yeah. That's kind of the perfect situation, but not so perfect if you were actually deliver on time.
Yeah, I basically didn't get that. I was just in it to play and learn how to play drums properly.
But I don't think we weren't late, were we?
I don't think they didn't come out until I think the fall.
We were definitely running short on time for the next record.
I think we just made the cut.
This one, we were okay.
Yeah, I don't remember when it came out, but I know when we did our first tour with the Weaker Thans, it had just come out. And that was in like September, October of 2003.
The only thing that shocked us or surprised us was that we found out that you needed bonus tracks for the Japanese release.
Japanese, yeah.
And our record was some anniversary of trade relations.
75 years.
Between Japan and Canada.
Yeah.
So we had that special.
Remember that time we thought we were going to go there and play?
I do remember that time. I do remember that time.
I remember those videos.
Metric.
Was it with Metric, really?
It was supposed to be with Metric and the Screamy Band.
Oh, really? Alexis on Fire?
Alexis on Fire.
Alex is on Fire?
Alex is on Fire.
Great band. Just saw them at the Danforth Music Hall.
They're awesome.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're still good.
And speaking of Sutton, I got to say, I saw him on Friday playing with Rusty, and it was awesome to see him play bass yet again.
No, he's good in that band, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. He's great in that band.
They're Toronto-based, right? Okay,
yeah.
It's just weird when he said, you know, we love playing Toronto. I thought, you guys are fun.
Sutton did double duty for us on the Weaker Thans tour.
That's right.
The very first one we ever did through the one with you.
The Canadian one we did. No, not with you.
It was us. And
Trevor.
Trevor and Sutton.
That was Weeks or Weekends.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Before Weeks or Weekends.
I mean, I don't know. No. But the record had just come out. Okay. And we were all bummed out because we're in Kingston and it's snowing and Trevor has the records. And it's our basically record release party in Kingston. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to make it out. You remember that?
No.
I'm like, you have to come. You have to come. He's like, well, it's snowing really bad. I'm like, dude, come on.
We're here.
Yeah, we're here.
The fuck?
Yeah, because we were in...
Who played... Yumi and Sutton had come with...
Yeah,
the
in the bus.
You drove the bus.
Yeah.
That and broke down every night.
Every day. Every day.
Every day and every night. Anytime it cooled down, it wouldn't start.
Every time you had to start it,
it wouldn't start.
It wouldn't start. Got that thing. Well, we just got it going good, actually. When you were, it was starting.
I was just
because it was summer.
Bunk.
Yeah.
Cold weather, it didn't get along with.
Well, the very end of its life, it would start because I spent all the money on it to get it fixed and get it running and get it, you know, good for the road. But we had so many ups and downs with that thing. It was great when it was standing still.
It was.
It was great.
A lounge.
Yeah, that was
the lounge, yeah.
Let's hear a song.
Someone, build that
Oh, that's right. I was trying to really try to... The Al didn't sing backgrounds on this because I was constantly trying to work at beating the clock to... Because Spring was having a baby.
Any day.
A day away. And that's I remember I was doing vocals. I forgot what song it was, but Spring said, "It's time." And I'm on the, like, doing vocals. And I get the call. I'm like, oh, crap. You know what I mean? Like, and my head was like... Like, I got to go home. My head was like all over the place. Yeah. This record. Yeah.
Yeah. You were going in, like, pulling an 8-hour shift at work and then coming in and doing like 6 hours of vocal. You'd go home at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Trying to get vocals done.
Just trying to finish it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when Everett came, it was you and your buddy that came in and did some work. Who's your neighbor? We were just talking to Pete. He came in and did some engineering while you were doing guitars.
Yes, because because I couldn't run around. I didn't want to run around the friggin' rooms by myself.
Yeah, so work was done like, what, 2 or 3 days?
Yeah.
Where I just never came in. It was like, because I had had a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I was selfish ass.
I forgot about that, yeah. We got him to run tape.
Yeah. So that one, we were talking about it, but we have to say it because... The song obviously is about the movie Office Space, but my big plan was to get Jason Tate, who looked like Peter Gibbons from Office Space, to play the part
in the video,
like Smile Goes a Mile, all that stuff. Like, is this good for the company? Which ended up becoming the video for,
whatever it was called,
the next record.
Not the Chicken Coop one.
The Chicken Coop one.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how that video came into fruition, because I still thought the idea was great.
Yeah.
Then we had that guy who wanted to get his parking pass or his parking ticket paid for. That guy.
Oh, yeah, right.
That guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that guy.
The actor?
Yeah, the actor.
Yeah. The lead actor. Mm. The lead actor.
Yeah. So what were you guys... So you would come in and do guitars... And then you'd come in a little bit, and Phil was gone.
No,
after Phil played bass on, he was like...
He never came back.
He never came back, yeah. So it was like the three of us.
I think he did maybe 4 days of bass.
I was just going to say one or two.
I think it was a little bit more, because he would always...
He had to learn the songs.
And he needed a ride. He needed a ride.
That was the other thing, yeah.
And so a lot of times, we would have to pick him up.
Mm.
One of us would have to get him... He lived in Oshawa?
He was in Oshawa, that's right.
You brought him in from Oshawa?
No.
I thought he had his car.
No. Where was he taking the train in or something?
No, maybe he had a vehicle at that point.
He had a car, but it broke down. That's why he couldn't do the last two songs.
Yeah, and I guess he just never came back.
He just never came back because his car was broken.
See you later.
Yeah. No, that's what it takes to not be in the band
That happened
anymore.
To Dave, too.
Oh, yeah.
And we had to drive to Bowmanville to pick him up for practice
and drive him
back to Scarborough and then take him back to Bowmanville.
I had got tasked with having to do that, and we didn't say one word in the car all the way home. I felt bad for him at the end of it because, like, I was so mad. I'm like, why am I driving for 2.5 hours? We don't need to get into that.
Yeah.
But that was... let's talk about this band, the song The Line, because...
Oh, yeah.
That's the slow song. Can you think the first four songs are pretty upbeat, and then The Line is that song that sort of, like... Well, we know slow songs, too.
And it may have been one of my favorites off this record. I just remember Jay had actually... This is the first song, I think, that we wrote with... Jay wrote the drums for this, did he not? Or did we already...
Yeah, I think this was a new song.
I think this was brand new.
Yeah.
And when the... I just loved the guitar part. I just liked the guitar part that it came up with that song.
Yeah, yeah.
For this song, rather.
I remember that opening film, one of you guys literally taking a shit, going, yeah, that's it. Like,
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
This is also one of those songs that, I played it for Jason Tate, actually. We still mentioned Jason Tate a lot in this podcast. But where he heard that fill at the start, and went, what the fuck was that? Like, he heard it and went, like, you could tell he was like, what? This is the biggest fill ever. Because it's simple, but it's super...
It was a huge sound. He had great drum sounds, which helped it sound massive, right?
Well, there was moments where I didn't really trust myself, you know what I mean? Like recording this record
This is what I mean, because you're the artist and the producer, and this is the first time I think we'd done that.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than demos.
Well, demos, yeah, and I think for us, in hindsight, to hire a producer to work with us, like a Blurton, in our studio, it might have made it a little better, but at the end of the day, we had this experience that was just like way beyond.
Yeah.
Because I think Ian would lose his marbles. If Ian was in the studio with us trying to drink 1,000 beers, maybe be into it. Or, you know, he probably, because he came to my studio once to finish
sign
off.
Sign the waiver.
Yeah, to finish the vocal. We ran out of money.
And we ran out of money, so we had to do the vocals before we flew to Vancouver to mix a record.
Yeah.
But you could tell he was sort of like, I like my space, but I don't know. Do you think about, like, what if we did it this way, or what if it was tomorrow we have to record this record again?
No. I didn't, because I thought you guys were champions with all this stuff, because I came out of a shithole rehearsal space in Scarborough with like a four
track. And you know what? Recorder. This is the first time that you and I, well, I guess we got that Factor grant, but we actually had a label who was willing to pay us whatever, pennies, but still, they were willing to give us money, and we built the studio with that money.
Yeah, we bought the computer with the money. And
hard drives,
anything that needed to be done. I think we paid for like 2 months of the rent for the space too.
Yeah, we did.
At the same time.
$600 was it?
Back a month? Then, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think when we moved into the other space, it was $640.
You're right.
Only a select few of you guys can come with us.
Yeah.
Of use guys.
Everybody.
Everybody showed up.
Use guys.
Anybody that wanted to show up.
Inside. Yeah, but the...
That's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other show to talk about those guys that are probably dead.
Fucking right.
Yeah. You guys, you don't pay your rent, you're up.
Actually, I'm going to say this and then we'll stop at that. But Al and I were just talking about this a week ago. And was there a night, were you with us when we jammed a Whopper through the mail slot? Was that?
No.
Okay.
I was with you. We put him through his mail slot. We jammed a burger.
I know our last night, and I'm proud to say this in a way, but I took a dump in their
garbage can.
They deserved it.
They deserved it. Every bit of it. Because that place was on the end of its ropes too, like the second place. So we'd already been displaced once, and now we're getting displaced again.
I'm pretty sure they weren't even paying the rent. They were just taking cash from all
the
tenants.
Times too with that date. Well, the guy who's the manager who stole a tuner off Al, and we were so freaked out, like, how did that happen? Where did it go?
But, yeah,
and we realized that the guy who was the manager of the place was breaking into rooms and stealing stuff.
His gear was going missing out of everybody's room.
Yeah. And you lost that piece of gear from Apex?
Oh, I don't remember.
It was a mixer of some description.
And that was part one. So that was good. We ran that off to about an hour. The next part's going to be about an hour as well. So, yeah, good times, good conversation. Please, please come back next week to catch the second half of this pretty neat little story about a little band from Canada that put out a record in Sweden and Europe and Japan and toured all over Europe a couple of times with his friends. And so next week, will be part two. So have a good week, and we'll see you again. And don't forget to shop on Amazon by going to applelog.ca/Amazon. And don't forget to go to betterhelp.com/Apolog and enter the code word Apolog for your 7-day trial. And so maybe Bose will come back one day. I like your pair. See you next week. Ta-ta.